Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography. This is the Soundography pre-show. You're hearing it before the show, but it's part of the show. Isn't that weird? I'm Brian Ibbett.
I'm Hammond Chamberlain.
And today, you know, it's funny. Today we're joined by, if there ever was an official third host of Soundography, I think it would be this gentleman right here. He's supported us with a couple of other previous shows, which we both enjoy tremendously. And he's brought us a third. Welcome to the show again, Peter Emig.
Mahoy.
Mahoy. a little jury thing in there, which I don't even know the origins of, but I just know it's a jury thing. Well, welcome. It's good to have you back on here.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Yeah. But you've brought us in the past. You've brought us David Wilcox. You've brought us Deer Hunter, two very different bands. Peter, tell us who you've had us take a look at here with today's Soundography.
Oh, I thought we'd go back to the progressive rocks for this one with a little band called Coheed and Cambria.
Nice. Good suggestion. And it's a good suggestion. I said it because I know so little about this band. My only experience with Coheed and Cambria is the fact that they're on Rock Band, on Harmonix Rock Band. And just that one song, Welcome Home, which I know and I like, and I like performing it in front of my virtual audience. They seem to enjoy it. I get applause from them.
Well, it's a great song.
It is a great song.
You should get applause.
Well, what made you decide to thrust Coheed and Cambria upon us?
Well, Coheed and Cambria is actually my favorite band that has been touring in my lifetime.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you've been kind of holding on to this compared to the other ones, which are not as, I mean, you like them, but you don't apparently like them as much as you like these guys.
Well, yeah, I thought you guys would get to Coheed and Cambria independently.
Naturally.
So the first time I was like, Deer Hunter, because I thought it would be less likely. And same thing with David Wilcox. I thought they won't get to these guys. And then afterwards I said, but I want to talk about Coheed. So then I changed my mind.
That's a good way to kind of force our hand. I mean, you know, with an infinite podcast, we'll eventually get to every band ever. Because
except once for one, right, Brian?
Except for one. Yes, we'll never do that one. The one that shall not be named. You know, when we pass on, when we shuffle off this mortal coil, our virtual versions, which will be up and running by that time, will be able to continue the podcast ad infinitum and never end. So it'll be really good.
We'll be broadcasting live from San Junipero.
Very good. So what is your favorite memory associated with Coheed and Cambria? What when you think of them, what's the heart music playing and the screen kind of going all wavy, the memory that comes into play?
Well, I have seen Coheed and Cambria, gosh, 19 times live since 2005.
Wow.
The memory that most sticks out to me is when me and one of my friends were driving down from Denver to New Mexico to see them because they were playing with Deer Hunter and Porcupine Tree. And it was a different lineup that they had been at the Ogden, a month and a half or so before. So we said, well, we got to see them with Deer Hunter.
Yeah. Yeah, so for sure.
We drove down, and this was in the original Apple iPhone days. Mm-hmm. So people were still using MapQuest in order to find things.
What, printed out paper sheets?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We got lost on our way to the actual venue.
Oh, no.
And we were driving around looking, and I saw Claudio's hair, and I jumped out of a moving car in order to go say hello to him and his fiance at the time, now wife, Chandra.
Oh, wow. He does have recognizable hair. No.
Oh, yeah.
There. Yeah. And it is a very sharp juxtaposition from, for me at least, from his voice. Like, It is not the voice you'd expect to hear coming out of somebody with hair like that. Maybe I'm just follically jealous of everybody with hair,
their first widely seen music video has, it starts off with him shaking his mane of hair.
It's the one and I saw.
it's for A Favor House Atlantic, which is also the song that he sings the highest in. Mm-hmm. So at first I really thought that it was a joke.
Right.
Oh, like, there's no way that voice is coming out of that man.
Like, see, they just had an actor come up and portray the lead singer of Coheed and Cambria just for this song.
Yes, especially since it's a funny music video.
It is quite an impressive mane of hair, though, for sure.
I'm jealous of it.
I'm looking at the video right now. That's what's his face from Freaks and Geeks? Martin Starr, right? Appearing in the video for this? I think it might be.
Peter,
that's the bass player, Mike Todd.
Okay, he just happens to look like Martin Starr.
Yes.
Gotcha, okay. Well, good. Well, I can't wait to learn more about these guys for sure. Now that I know that Martin Starr is not a member of the band. What is A Favor House Atlantic your favorite song? Do you have another favorite? Is there one that you kind of, I don't know, maybe one that isn't on the greatest hits that you kind of always are drawn to?
My two favorites would be The Crowing, which is off their second album, In Keeping Secrets.
Okay.
And it's sometimes on, like, it's on the double greatest hits album, but not on the single greatest hits album.
I'll allow it. Yeah.
And
my favorite that isn't on either is The Willing Well Part 2, Fear Through the Eyes of Madness.
Cool. As we go through this, we'll definitely spend some extra time with those songs to kind of listen. And what is it about those songs that you really like? Is it the vocals, the lyrics?
The end of The Crowing the second half starts with this ridiculous rhythm guitar part. And Claudio is also the rhythm guitar player. And I didn't know that until the first time I saw them live. He could have just been playing solos for all I knew.
Mm.
But so he plays this rhythm part.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts singing while doing the same thing. And it has these crazy pinched harmonics in it. And I was like, it takes all of the imagination that I have in order to pretend that I could play that. But to be able to do that with that precision while also singing blew my mind.
Oh yeah. Wow.
And then it moves into this around and it's very, yeah, it is epic even for them.
That's cool. That's really cool. Huh. All right. Well, we'll definitely take a look at those. And what's something that you would want, not just the listeners, but Hammond and I to know as we're going into this episode? Like what kinds of things do you want us to be paying attention to? What kinds of things do you want people to look for? Things like that.
Well, they have a similar thing to The Deer Hunter, where you will hear certain bits of music come back for different songs because their thing is also telling a long story until the end.
Right.
Until the most recent album, which is the only one that isn't part of the story.
Isn't part of the long sweeping story.
Yes.
The Discworld of rock and roll basically is what we're looking at here.
Pretty much.
Nice.
The other thing that I would keep in mind is that they, for two albums, they had a different rhythm section than for the rest of their albums, and it's right in the middle. So if you start with those two albums, they sound pretty different everywhere else.
Mm. Really?
Which
okay.
You guys will notice.
Yeah, for sure. That's interesting. So it's instead of bringing somebody in the rhythm section that kind of sounded, that kind of kept the sound consistent, they just went with something a little bit, a lot more different, apparently.
Yeah, they picked up Chris Penny from Dillinger Escape Plan, and he's just a machine.
Like, wow.
yeah, the tempo went super, super fast for, about two albums, and then they came back to where they were. So if you really like that, those two albums, you will be disappointed afterwards. And if you didn't really like those albums, you will be consoled.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Interesting. All right, cool. Cool. Can't wait to check those out for sure. Anything else that you want us to be kind of keeping an eye out for? Like anything? I already know that Coheed and Cambria, there aren't two dudes in the band named Coheed and Cambria. That part I've learned.
Right, because Coheed and Cambria are stand-ins for Claudio's parents in the comic book on which the albums are based. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is cool. Again, kind of following that same Deer Hunter idea, which is story-driven music, which I'm such a big fan of. So I'm definitely looking forward to this.
Well, yeah, I guess the plus side to Coheed is that if you don't know, if you don't feel like you're picking up enough of the story from the albums, you can then buy graphic novels.
Cool. Very cool. All right, I will check that out. Hammond, do you have any other questions for Peter before ask him where we can find him online? Well, then, Peter, where can we find you online?
You can find me at Soundography. This is the only place where I'm actually online.
You know, it's funny. I think you've told us that before. No Facebook, no Twitter, nothing like that. Just nothing you want to promote anyway. You might be on those services, but nothing you want listeners to start hounding you about.
No, that they want me to sponsor their bands.
Oh, right. There we go. Yes, exactly. Well, hey, here's a good money-making opportunity for all of us. Very cool. Well, then, without further ado, we're going to go right into this week's episode of Soundography. We will see you on the other side. And thanks again, Peter. Really appreciate it.
Oh, sure thing.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography. Soundography is a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Hibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we are talking about what I would have, again, going into the show, what I would have described as a new metal, prog metal duo, Coheed and Cambria.
Well, we heard about them in the intro that Peter gave us, so we have a little bit of background.
We do. We've got some background on it. But it's funny because that's exactly prior to this week. That's exactly what I thought. I thought Coheed and Cambria were two guys whose last names were Coheed and Cambria. And it wasn't until we started getting into this and looking at the stories behind these first few albums, it's like, oh, wow, okay, this is kind of cool. I like the way this goes, the direction this is.
Yeah, I'd heard of them. I owned one or at least one, maybe two albums before we started doing this show. They were just in the back of my CD collection. It wasn't something I listened to frequently, and we'll get into why in a little bit. But I was familiar with them. I had no idea the roots of the name until I started doing the research. So,
okay. Yeah, the extent of my familiarity, as I mentioned in the opening of the thing, was Rock Band. The only thing I knew about them is like, oh, they do that song Welcome Home that's in Rock Band that I know and yes, that I can play. That's it. That is like the extent of my Coheed and Cambrian knowledge prior to my pre-Cambrian knowledge. Prior to
and Rock Band loves these guys. Just going in, yeah, they've got like 10 or 11 songs or something like that in Rock Band.
Right. Wow. It was that very first Rock Band that Like the one that gets included with the game,
yes.
As opposed to one of the stuff you buy afterwards. Well, let's talk about these guys. They are an American progressive rock band from Nyack, New York, or Nyack. I don't think that's how you pronounce it, Nyack. Formed in 1995. They got together after their previous band broke up after a fight about gas money, reportedly. Before they settled on what would be their style, they experimented with a wide variety of other musical styles, which is kind of an interesting thing. Deciding on, instead of it being like, well, this is the kind of music I play, this is the kind of music we're going to do, it was like, all right, should we be metal? Should we be prog rock? Should we be folk? You know, there's so many different directions.
Yeah, it's funny. In my mind, I see this montage of them coming in with different outfits and hairstyles.
Right, like a movie montage.
Yes, and it's like very comedically done. Yes.
Bell bottoms. Yeah, right. Okay, that's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. The lineup of the band is Claudio Sanchez on lead vocals, guitar, and keyboards, Travis Stever on guitar and backing vocals, Josh Eppard on drums, keys, and vocals, and Zach Cooper on bass and vocals. Most of the albums are concept albums based on a science fiction story called The Armory Wars, a series written by Claudio. It's been transcribed into a series of comic books as well as a novel.
I think it's Armory Wars, A-M-O-R-Y, Armory Wars.
Oh, Armory Wars. It's not Armory Wars. Amori.
It's Amore.
That's Amori. Yeah, okay. I'm saying it now. Amori Wars. You know, all the time I've been reading that, because they've got it in the title of one of the albums, don't they? Or maybe the song titles.
It's a song title.
Yeah. I've been reading it as Armory. That's really funny, but it is Amori now that I look at this. Okay. People can stop yelling at their smartphones that are listening to this going, it's Amori Wars, you bald dummy.
This egg. Why is this egg talking?
Why is this egg talking? How is this egg talking? 1999, they released their initial EP called Plan to Take Over the World, and as well as another EP called the Penelope EP. They released them during a time when the band was working under the name Shabooty. Naked Prey. I love that name. I almost wish they would have kept it. I saw that in All Music, reading their biography. I'm like, oh, why didn't they keep the name Shabooty?
Because it didn't play to the high science fiction and pomposity of a prog metal band from Nyack, New York.
I guess not, right? Who are you going to go see tonight? Oh, this really cool, deep, deep prog metal band called Shabooty. Yeah, you're right. The band wrote dozens of songs. Many of them showed up on these two EPs. In 2000, they released a follow-up EP called Delirium Trigger. The band lineup started to solidify, as well as the direction of the band when this EP was released. Several songs on this were based on a series of stories that Claudio had written called The Bag Online Adventures. It was later renamed The Amori Wars. And the band's name, as we alluded to, was pulled from the two main characters in the story. The band's logo, the keywork, is a symbol for the planetary alignment of the Amori universe.
Yeah.
Really cool.
This is high science fiction. This is the hard science fiction stuff that I have a really hard time like reading and getting behind. But hey, mm-hmm. Some people do, so good on them.
I'd be curious to find out if there's somebody who came to these guys from the sci-fi direction as opposed to from the music direction, right? Like hearing these guys and saying, oh, I really like this band. Oh, cool. Science fiction and reading the stories or whatever.
Well, that's like Rush really did the album Clockwork Angels, but there was also a book that went along with it. And I'm wondering if someone discovered the book not realizing it was connected to Rush.
I'd be really curious to find that out. Find out if somebody's done that with this too. Because, I mean, if you discover the comic books or you discover the novel or whatever, and then say, oh, now I want to read the music that goes along with this, is it going to be a harder jump to make with, science fiction is one thing. If you like science fiction, you're into kind of probably all the different aspects of hard science fiction. But music is going to be a lot more focused taste. You might be a science fiction fan who likes British music or 60s pop or something like that. And it's going to be harder to fit the key into that hole.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For 2002, they released their full album, The Second Stage Turbine Blade. They signed with Equal Vision Records. They featured a guest appearance on that album by Dr. No of the band Bad Brains.
So just as a side note, Bad Brains is my podcaster post-hardcore group.
There's a lot of us out there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a lot of Bad Brains in podcasting, and I'm their leader. This also had revised versions of tracks that were originally released on Delirium Trigger. And then they released The Devil in Jersey City as their first single and video.
Okay. Notes on this for me.
Sure.
This is where we can discuss the voice a little bit. It's not just that this voice is on a higher register. It's not like Geddy Lee's voice where it sounds like his pants are like 18 sizes too small. This is just a different kind of voice. And when I was listening to the first album with my daughter, my 13-year-old, she was convinced it was a female singing. Mm. And I'm like, no, it's a dude. I promise it's a dude. And she's like, no, it's probably a guest vocalist. It's a guest singer. And so I had to actually pull it up and look. And it was just, there's a very different way the song is delivered. And then it gave me cognitive dissonance when I was watching the videos, hearing that voice come out of what looked like an angry Wookiee.
And I apparently need to watch the videos. I mean, I've seen photos of Sanchez, but you're right. When I was listening to this, even knowing what Claudio Sanchez looked like, it is not at all who I still envision in my head singing. Mm-hmm. I do kind of picture a John Anderson, Geddy Lee kind of, you know, smaller dude, prog rock, long hair,
maybe a cape.
Okay. All right. It wasn't a good cape, you know what? The guy that I'm envisioning totally could rock a cape. He could pull that off for sure.
And the other note I had is that the scream in Earshot. I was wearing headphones when I heard that. It really made me angry because it's loud and piercing.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of music that Tristan listens to that would fit more with Coheed and Cambria's earlier music than their later stuff, and I have a hard time with it. It's not so much Cookie Monster screaming as it is the way that the bass and the drums are completely performed in parallel. Mm-hmm. So it's like if the drums are going, the bass is going, you know, it's like, yeah. I want a little bit of difference. They don't have to always hit the same note, or hit at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then this album too, this is very pop punk influenced. I mean, this could very easily be in the Green Day catalog because it's a lot of that kind of poppy punk sound in this one. They didn't get super proggy until later. Yeah. This has some really, I mean, it has more flourishes, of course, because they're starting to experiment with prog stuff, but this is very pop punk kind of catchy kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say you're right. But it is on the angrier side of pop punk. And that's something that, that I have a hard time with sometimes with bands, if especially newer bands, and maybe this is just old Brian and Brian is set in his ways, but when I'm listening to bands that are, this just seems to be a newer thing, bands that are, that the content of every song is, contains lyrics like screaming down on your knees and, you know, you're never going to get beat by the machine and da 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 da. It's like, it's a lot of every, I don't know. It just seems like there's nowhere to go. You've painted yourself into a very narrow corner. Now with these guys, it's a little bit different because it's all within the confines of the story that the songs fit into. So in a dystopian future, in an apocalyptic future, you're not going to have a ballad that goes, I'm so happy I met you and I always want to be with you and
yeah.
stuff like that. So I can understand that we're not going to get anything like that here, and I'm fine with that. But on bands where they're not confined by a plot and a story that needs to be a through line with an entire album, or five albums in this case, it's something that bothers me, and some of that bother translates to this as well.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think that they painted themselves into a kind of a confrontational corner, even within confines of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to do something beyond that musically or creatively when you kind of set yourself in a particular corner of the room.
Maybe there's a confiningness to it. But there's also a focus aspect mm-hmm. to it. You know, if you're a songwriter and you're told you're only going to be writing songs that pertain to this story, and you come up with, oh, I've got a great idea for a song, but there's no way to use it and have it still fit with the story. That's one thing. There's a whole different dimension if you're a songwriter and you need that structure to be able to say, all right, well, we've taken the reader through, or the listener through, these parts of the story, we need to set up the final conflict and the climax and that sort of thing. And then you're like, okay, well, those are the building blocks I need to be able to write a song, as opposed to what's on my mind today. Mm-hmm. Well, I like this bowl of fruit that I'm looking at. Let me write a song about a bowl of fruit.
And then
it'd
be the annoying, angry orange, because you painted yourself in this confrontational corner.
Sure, maybe. But I think that, you know, to different songwriters, that's going to be both limiting and constricting, and also the structure that they may need.
Yeah.
I think personally, if I was a songwriter, it feels like the thing that would work best for me is having somebody who just sits there and says, it gives me bullet points. All right, you need a song that's going to be about a dude who works on the dock, and his girlfriend who works in a diner all day, and you know.
I knew you were going to go there. I don't know how, but I knew you were going to do that.
Right. For this other song, you're going to do a song about a small town boy.
he never really meant any harm.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, maybe I'm the kind of songwriter, or I would be the kind of songwriter who'd excel in a Coheed and Cambria.
So maybe you just need to write musicals then, because that's what musicals are. They're hitting bullet points of story points.
Right. Yeah, you're not going to have someone in the middle of Hamilton start singing about, about this bowl of fruit that I've been writing about, and here's a bowl of banana. Anyway, okay. All right, well, let's keep going here.
Okay.
2003, they released In Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth 3. Released a Favor House Atlantic and Blood Red Summer singles with videos from this album. They toured with the bands Linkin Park, The Used, Slipknot, AFI, and others on the Warped Tour, and they peaked at number 52 on the album charts, or this album peaked at number 52 on the album charts and was certified gold.
This album had a ton of System of a Down influences on it. A lot of it felt very System of a Downy, and I was okay with that.
Is that a method for keeping track of your dryer sheets?
Yes.
System of a Downy?
Yes, it is. It is. It's a it's a very confrontational way of keeping track of dryer sheets.
I love it. Okay, good.
Because you can do what you want to do.
Yeah. Because you want to do. very good. I do like also, by the way, how Second Stage Turbine Blade is the second part of the album, but it's not like it's called Amori Wars 2.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called, you know, isn't called Amori Wars 3. I mean, In Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth 3.
Yeah, they get really crazy with the titles from here out, though.
Right. Yeah. All right. let's see, in 2005, there was, I was trying to make a comparison to like, Look Who's Talking and Look Who's Talking To. Look Who Else Is Talking Also, or whatever the third one was called.
The Talking.
Die Hard, Die Harder. Yeah.
The Talkening.
The Talkening. This time it's personal. In 2005, they released Live at La Zona Rosa. Get a live album in there. Their success drew the attention of Columbia Records. And after all this, they signed a multi-album deal with them. Continuing their storyline, 2005, they released Good Apollo, I'm Burning Star 4, Volume 1, From Fear Through the Eye of Madness. All right, now we're starting to get into, holy cow, this is prog.
Yes, proggy album titling. This is so proggy pompousness right here. You can love these guys or hate them, but the title is Proggy Pomposity.
It really is, yeah. It's been their most successful album to date. It peaked at number 7, sold over 1 million copies, and it marked a move from post-hardcore to a more progressive metal sound.
And you can actually hear they become better musicians and better vocalists, and things started really kind of becoming very cohesive in Cambria.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, you the missed first... it. Cohesive in Cambria instead of cohesive.
Cohesive. Oh, I like that. I totally missed that. This is when I started to like listening to their music this week. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I had a really hard time with the EPs and those first two full albums. This is when I'm like, all right, I'm really starting to appreciate this. And it probably is because we get to the single Welcome Home, which is the one I knew from Rock Band.
So Welcome Home. Yeah. Am I wrong in saying there's a very heavy tinge of Cashmere in this song?
I didn't think about that until you had brought it up.
And now I can't not hear it.
Right. Yeah. There's something to that more as a, like you say, an homage than a structure that it follows.
Yeah. But I kept waiting for P. Diddy to start rapping over the top of it. It sounded so much like Cashmere.
Oh, don't bring that up. That is, no Cashmere out there should have P. Diddy rapping over the top of it. There's, you know.
So before we go too much further, though, it's got to be hard to tour with concept albums. Because
right.
You're telling stories in these albums, and to pick songs out of them, now they've got, you know, what, 3 or 4 albums out, mm-hmm. Picking songs to play must be hard, because although they're good songs and the crowds like them, as a storyteller, you'd want to tell a cohesive story.
For sure.
Touring with a concept album's got to be rough.
Well, we talked a lot about this with the Deer Hunter, because they had that whole concept album thing going as well. Mm-hmm. And you've got to either play the entire album, and if you've got a 4-part or a 5-part album, then my gosh, good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just say, you know what, we're going to Cliff's Notes this, and we're going to do the important songs that are pivotal to the story. But you got to also figure that the people there, if they're familiar at all with the music, they already have the story at home. They don't care about, you know, attending a live performance of the story they already know. They want to just basically see this band perform live. And so I think you pick out the standout tracks, you pick out the things that really let the band showcase their talents, but you don't necessarily worry about keeping things A, in order, and B, consecutive.
Yeah. And you're going to laugh, but I'm going to bring this up because it's actually relevant. In 2000, Dream Theater released Metropolis 2000 Scenes from a Memory, and it's a 80-minute concept album, and they played it from front to back for like the better part of 2 or 3 years on tour. Mm-hmm. It was like they do a 3-act show, and so the first act is music, and they do Scenes from Memory, and they do some other stuff, or they do Scenes from Memory and then do other stuff, whatever. But they have a really hard time pulling songs out of it now to play live, because mm-hmm. they have it as like one giant piece of music.
They know it as that. Yeah. Yeah.
And every now and then they'll pull one or two songs out, but it's you don't see them very often anymore when they play live, because one, they played the tar out of them when they were touring. I mean, for years.
They're probably sick of doing it. Yeah. Sure.
But at the same time, they see it as a piece of music, a full cohesive story from front to back. Mm. So right. It's interesting. I touring with a concept album has got to be hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so. And if you've got one, great. If you've got five, good luck with that.
Yeah.
In 2005, they released another live album, Live at the Hammerstein Ballroom, and they also released Live at the Starland Ballroom. So a couple of live albums. 2006, Kerrang! XFM UK Acoustic Sessions was released. It was an iTunes exclusive EP featuring pretty much just what you expect, those live performances for XFM and Kerrang! Around the same time, Claudio released an album from his side project, The Prize Fighter Inferno. The album released in 2006 was called My Brother's Blood Machine, and it was designed to be a prequel to all of the other albums. I listened to this, and it's got a little bit more of a an electronic sound to it, not as organic as the full band, which kind of makes sense if it's a quote-unquote solo project.
I have to admit that Claudio is really committed to when he committed to a project, he is committed to a project.
It's like James Cameron and Avatar now, right? It's like,
the only thing I'm ever going to do for the next 25 years is Avatar.
Well, and he did that with Titanic. He did the movie, and then he started diving on it, and he made the documentary about it. And
he also gets fixated.
Mm-hmm.
Man, let's see James Cameron make a movie of the Amori Wars. let's see. Claudio released, that I've already read. There were some lineup changes within the band at this time, with a change in the bass player and the drummer. Members of Dillinger Escape Plan and Foo Fighters sat in for temporary stints with the band and performances. In 2007, they released Good Apollo, I'm Burning, Star 4, Volume 2, No World for Tomorrow. So a sequel to the 2005 album. This album debuted at number 6. The first single was The Running Free, and the second single was Feathers. The video for Feathers starred Rena Riffle of Showgirls fame.
You read that with a straight face. I'm so proud of you.
I'm you say the words Showgirls to me, I think Elizabeth Berkley, Gina Gershon.
That's the movie.
And Kyle MacLachlan. I can't think of Rena Riffle.
She's been in she was also in Striptease. There's a theme to her career.
Wow. I guess so. Yeah. I think we know she. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I see a photo of her and it's like, yeah, I totally know. No, there was a Showgirls 2.
No way, the Showgirls-ing.
The show, and this time it's this time it's worse. That's really funny. Yeah, I seeing her face, I totally recognize her.
Okay, so I will say that from start to back, this might be my favorite album. One of the things I noticed is that their suite at the end seems to be an homage to the titles in them seem to be homages to other progressive pieces of music. For instance, Fall of House Atlantic. Think Edgar Allan Poe, Tales of Mystery and Imagination from Alan Parsons, Fall of House of Usher. Next one, Radio Bye Bye, Queen, Radio Gaga.
Sure. I thought the same thing actually when I saw that title.
Then The Incomplete, I had it in my head. I can't remember what that one was. The Road to the Damned, I can't think of. And then On the Brink would be Yes's On the Edge. Close to the edge. Yes.
Okay.
So I think the other two probably are too. I just don't know the music. I'm wondering if that was on purpose or not.
I don't know. But the first thing I thought of when I saw those, the fact that they had, you know, numbers in these titles, it's like, okay, this is kind of like the side two. You may be able to listen to all of side one, or like you can listen to the songs from side one in different sittings or heaven forbid, shuffle. But by golly, when you listen to side two, you better listen to everything from start to finish.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I thought of when I saw those.
Yeah, I can't think of the songs that The Incomplete and The Road and The Damned might be leaning to. But I feel like I'm onto something because The Fall of House Atlantic, the Radio Bye-Bye, Radio Gaga. I mean, it's the same syllables. And
yeah, but that wasn't a concept. Well, I guess it kind of wasn't really as much a concept album as it was a...
No, I'm just thinking that they're making references to other famous progressive pieces of music, gotcha, like things that inspired them.
I see.
And maybe I'm reaching. Yeah, I'm not saying I'm right, but I'm saying that there is something. There might be something there.
Mm-hmm. No, maybe. On the tour for Volume 2, No World for Tomorrow, they hired a touring keyboardist to play with them. As we mentioned, Welcome Home was a playable track on Rock Band, and then 10 Speed was made available later. Rock Band would go on to include five other Coheed and Cambria songs. In 2008, they recorded The Trooper for Kerrang's Maiden Heaven CD that was included in an issue of the magazine. I don't have that.
I do.
Track that down.
I do, okay. And it's really good because it also has Metallica and Dream Theater and a bunch of other kind of very cool versions of Iron Maiden songs.
Cool. I'll have to check that out. The band played Neverender in 2008. It was a four-night concert series where they played one album per night, held in New York, Chicago, LA, and London. Following that, in 2009, they released Neverender, Children of the Fence EP. Basically, this was a CD and DVD box set of the Neverender performances. Welcome Home was used in the trailer for the movie Nine.
That was
like four movies called Nine. You mean the animated one?
Yeah, this
one,
is
right?
The animated one. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry.
The musical, the really lush looking musical with
Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's right.
The guy that looks like Daniel Day-Lewis.
The guy that looks like Daniel Day-Lewis. That's funny. In 2010, they released Year of the Black Rainbow. It was a prequel to the conceptual story. So having events that took place before the second stage Turbine Blade. This actually was easily my favorite of the albums. I loved this album, and this was where I really definitely turned a corner. I may have started appreciating them during the Good Apollo stuff, but Year of the Black Rainbow for me was where I was like, oh, I could see listening to this for pleasure, not for work. It's, you know, that's the way you got to think about it.
That's
the album was released in both a standard iTunes, a standard version, an iTunes special edition, and a deluxe edition, with the deluxe edition including Year of the Black Rainbow novel and a special Year of the Black Rainbow black card that provides the holder early access to some Coheed shows. So you got to take that and show it to the Velvet Rope dude, and he's going to let you in. Sanchez has said that with the Coheed and Cambria saga completely chronicled on the group's first five albums, he has been contemplating the direction of future releases. I've thought of telling stories of the future and stories of the past, maybe getting involved more in the story of Sirius Amori in the stories, the fellow who figured out the value of the key work, he says, quote, or even stories that kind of parallel the ones that we're telling. It's kind of up in the air. I've started writing music for that next record, and I'm kind of hoping that maybe in doing so, that it's going to tell me which one to do. Cool.
Good for him. Good for him.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, well, now that I've finished with the story, I want to tell more of the story.
Yeah. You know, he and dude from The Deer Hunter could get together and probably do some damage musically if they wanted to.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, really. I mean, maybe even some really cool collaborative stories.
Yeah.
In the summer of 2011, Michael Todd, the bass player, was arrested on charges of robbery. Wes Stiles stepped in, and later the band and Todd parted ways permanently. They, around this time, they recorded a cover of ZZ Top's Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers for a tribute album and released a new song called Deranged for the game Batman Arkham City. I had that game. I don't remember the song, but obviously it had to do with Joker and
Batman,
the Takeover. Yeah. And Batman, sure. But primarily Joker. I don't see Batman listening to this in the Batmobile. I think this is like something Joker probably has on, or probably during the closing credits or something.
Or maybe Harley Quinn is rocking out to it while she's beating someone with a sledgehammer or something.
Could be. Yep, could be. In 2012, they released The Afterman, Ascension. Claudio announced that at New York Comic Con, the new album continues to follow the Amori story. They hinted that they would follow a new character, and that is The Afterman. Josh Eppard returned to the band, and Zach Cooper came in to play bass. This was an ambitious double album. The first part was released in October of 2012, and the second part released just a few months later in February of 2013. The Afterman tells a story of Sirius Amori, the namesake of the concept, as he explores the energy source holding together the keywork, the 78 worlds in which the Amori Wars is set, and finds that it is in fact an afterlife for departed souls.
Okay, so there 78 was, worlds. That means he's got a lot more material he can write on.
You know what this is starting to sound like? It's starting to sound like Discworld. Like all those novels associated with Discworld, it's like he's... There's so much potential in here, or maybe a scary amount of potential.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also talk that Mark Wahlberg and Steven Levinson will develop the story into a feature live action film. That'd be an interesting, I don't think that's ever been done before. A series of albums that was turned into.
That was based on a book. Yeah.
Right. And then following that turned into a movie. 2013, The Afterman Dissension, the part two of that book, came out. They released Domino, The Destitute, The Afterman, Dark Side of Me, and Number City as singles from both albums. When we were comforting clothes, I would neglect to keep. Oh, you're safe and unexposed, a portrait of time repeats. This moment now replaced. They also released a remastered version of their first album through their label. Also, they released a new version of A Favor House Atlantic as a single. Same year, The Afterman Live Edition came out and was released.
The Afterman.
Live perform. The Afterman.
What's his powers? Able to tell the
I'll
same.
I'll tell you afterwards.
Able to tell the same story for five albums.
Well, seven now. Are we up to seven? In 2015, I hope you're sitting down, they released The Color Before the Sun, the first non-concept album since their inception. Instead, the album reflects on Sanchez's recent events in his life, which includes moving from the country to the city, his child Atlas, there's actually a song of the same name on the album, love for his wife, that sort of thing, among others. Atlas had been released on their YouTube channel prior to the album release. You Got Spirit Kid and Here to Mars were singles. I listen to this thing from the first opening notes of The Island, or just Island, I guess it's called. I had to do a double take and look at iTunes Music to make sure that I was still listening to Coheed and Cambria, because this is so much more pop than everything else. I mean, this is almost, at least that first first song for sure, it's almost crawling into Maroon 5 non-single territory.
Yeah.
And I really liked it, but I'm guessing that hardcore fans did not like that direction.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one too. It's probably my second favorite after No World for Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really liked it. And it was after that I actually went back and listened to the solo Claudio stuff. Really liked it. There you go. That brings us to current Coheed and Cambria. Why don't you hit us with some statistics and general notes, please?
All right. So they have 7 top 10 albums. That's pretty impressive considering
that they're... very impressive considering they've released how many full studio albums? I guess 8, right? Yeah. I mean, I guess it was just that first album.
Yeah, the 7 top 10 albums. That's huge. Mm-hmm. Rock Band loves these guys, like has an intimate relationship with these guys.
Maybe an unhealthy relationship. Yes,
it's weird how much Rock Band likes these guys.
Yeah.
Sanchez says that he has been influenced by the likes of Zeppelin, Floyd, The Police, Misfits, mm-hmm. Queen, and Thin Lizzy, which also leads credence to my theory about the song titles and the other thing.
Sure, for sure. The Radio Bye Bye. Uh-huh.
At the Drive-In and Iron Maiden also have been included as inspirations as well. The band reports that they did not start listening to Rush until after their second album. So all their prog influences came right before they signed their deal with Columbia and did that first with Welcome Home, that album there. So
yeah,
it kind of starts.
That's funny because you'd think that I certainly felt like I heard some Rush, tendrils of Rush in those first couple EPs. So amazing that they didn't listen to Rush until after the second album.
The book reportedly pulls a line from Star Wars when Coheed returns home to his wife, Cambria. She says, "Somehow I've always known." So I don't know the context of this. I don't know what it's all about, but, you know, it was reported, so it's a thing, and so I thought I'd bring it up.
That is interesting. I mean, the Star Wars line is when Yoda tells... Oh, no, when Luke tells Leia
that... Yeah, I know that context. I don't know the context on the other one.
Well, darn it. That's where I was going to get to flash my knowledge of where that line came from in the Star Wars universe.
No, I knew that.
Yeah, okay. All right, fine. Let's jump into, I mean, they've had a few live albums and a couple sort of greatest hits compilations. There's the Essentials, the typical Essentials release. But hey, it takes us going to setlist.fm and taking a look to see what their Stairway to Heaven song is. If you go there and go to a concert, a Coheed and Cambria concert, what song are you pretty much guaranteed you're going to hear? And your choices that you put up were...
I put in Devil in Jersey, or Devil in Jersey City, actually, which maybe is a song about Joey Image. Welcome Home, No World mm-hmm. for Tomorrow, and I couldn't think of anything else. I'm not familiar enough with them to guess.
And I said it's got to be Welcome Home, and I purely based that on the fact that, well, only thing I know by them is that song Welcome Home. So it's got to be pretty darn popular. And sure enough, yeah, number one is Welcome Home. In Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth 3 is... second on the list, A Favor House Atlantic, and No World for Tomorrow is number 4. You got that one. 10 Speed of God's Blood and Burial, Blood Red Summer, Everything Evil, Here We Are Juggernaut, The Suffering, and Ode to a Bowl of Fruit on the Counter is their 10th song. No, that's I'm kidding. It's Valerian Trigger. But it'd be great if that was the case.
It's an instrumental.
Always like to see what their cover is that they do in concert, if there are any. Earliest one I can find on here is a cover of Nirvana's Drain You that they perform as the number 71st song, most popular song. They've done it 27 times in concert. They also do Milkfoot, a Davenport Cabinet cover. I don't know what that is. And if you told me it was a Davenport Cabinet cover, I probably would have said, oh, is that something you can pick up at Home Depot? and then Who Watches the Watchmen, a Prize Fighter Inferno cover. which is his side project anyway. Heaven and Hell, Black Sabbath.
Makes sense.
They in 16 times they've done a cover of Somebody That I Used to Know by Gautier. I need to find that on YouTube. Under the Milky Way by The Church. They've done covers of that in concert. That's a great song.
A great song. I can't believe. Oh, yeah. You know what else they could cover? I might change my pick. I'm going to go ahead and say it. The Cutting Crew. I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight.
Right. And that might even feel like it might even fit within the confines of the book.
Yeah.
Right. The Amory Wars book. That's awesome. Let's see. Red Rain by Peter Gabriel, kind of taking things back to an earlier Soundography episode. Can't Find My Way Home by Blind Faith. That's a great one, too.
Mm-hmm. You've talked about that one before.
What's that?
You've talked about that song before.
Red Rain?
No, Can't Find My Way Home.
Can't Find My Way Home by Blind Faith. Yeah, I think I described it as one of my favorite songs of 1971, I believe.
Well, also, we mentioned it when we yarded up on the Styx episode because they covered it.
Oh, right. They did it for Feedback. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. So there you go. A lot of their influences, Pink Floyd, Green is the Color. They do covers of their influences in concert. Love to see that. And a few in there that I'm totally going to have to see if there's stuff on YouTube. But speaking of covers, we like to see or like to give our suggestions for who we'd like to hear them cover. I'd actually, you know, with the theatrics and the bombasticness of their music, I would love to see them do a cover of one of the early Bond themes, probably one of the early female-fronted Bond themes. The ones I was leaning towards were You Only Live Twice, I think it was Nancy Sinatra, or Nobody Does It Better, the Carly Simon one for Spy Who Loved Me. I think it would be interesting to hear their take on something like that, mm-hmm. with their organic equipment, not mm-hmm. the electronic stuff from the solo album, but more of like the typical Coheed and Cambria sound. I think it'd be great.
And based on a typical Coheed Cambria sound, I picked Dear God by XTC because I think they would do something super interesting and super creative with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that too. It's good. Very good. All right, let's get into our playlist. This is the part of the show where we talk about songs that we would make on or that we would put onto a playlist for this band. Maybe not necessarily singles. I don't think either one of us said, let's put Welcome Home on this list. There might be a couple things that they released as quote-unquote singles, but you know, we'll get to that. We'll see. Always and Never by, from the Good Apollo. The first part of the Good Apollo albums, I picked that one. And again, that was like when I started really getting into the music. If she ran, with this I would share with you all of this count to no end. Behind your sealed eyes, you miss all that I've done for you. It has kind of a mother feel, Pink Floyd's mother feel to it.
Not Danzig, but Pink Floyd.
Not Danzig's mother. No, very different.
That's
no,
a very mother different from family.
No, but I mean, it definitely feels like it would be right at place, right at home on a Pink Floyd album. I really, really like that song. That was one where, you know, I stopped and kind of made a note like, all right, this I really like. Blood Red Summer from the Keeping Secrets album. This was actually the first song that really made me take notice. There was a lot of samey-stamey in those first few albums. Until in Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth 3 that I was like, all right, I see where they're going. I like this. Wake Up, from also from Good Apollo. A really touching song, which surprised the heck out of me, based on the stuff that was around it, the context of the music that was around it. And again, enough for me to perk up my ears and take notice. I wish that I could stay, but you argue more than this. I wish you could have seen my face in backseat staring out of the window. Good Night, Fair Lady. This is from the Afterman Ascending. Again, kind of does the job of breaking up the samey-samey of the album. Although, I don't feel like their stuff is as samey-samey post-2003 as I did pre-2003. I felt like a lot of their stuff, especially the Afterman albums and the Good Apollo albums, really started to evolve into something that I really enjoy. Well, the girl laid down the street to break this man's heart. Oh Lord, I think I deserve a little better than this. I think I've earned it. So I'll just keep humming this song and hope you follow. And my number five, not going to surprise anybody. They released a single in 2015 where they covered Hello by Adele. And I had no idea prior to that that these guys did covers. Obviously, we talked a little bit about their Iron Maiden and ZZ Top covers early in the show and stuff they do live. But holy cow, this is something really, really cool.
You never seem to be home. Hello from the outside.
I've only been able to find it on iTunes and Amazon. I don't know how they released it, if it was a physical single you could pick up. But what's cool about it is the Adele song, you know, the core or the verses are all wispy and dramatic but soft. And then for the choruses, she just like pounds at home hard with backing arrangement and stuff like that. These guys, just when you think that you know what to expect from them, they totally go a different way and it doesn't go heavy. It's really, really cool. Especially for a band that 90% of their music is would fit right at home in that chorus style of mm-hmm. Adele's version. So I'm really glad that they kind of changed it up. So that's my number five track, and well, I really liked it. Okay. It's a cover.
Surprise.
Surprise.
All right. I picked 2113 from Secrets of Silent Earth. Had a lot of transitions in it, and it really kept me interested in the song. Like every time I kind of figured I'd kind of fallen into a routine or a rhythm with them, they changed it up, and it was mm-hmm. interesting to kind of see those transitions and feel them coming and be wrong predicting them, and it was cool.
I do like that, yeah.
Then I picked the 10-speed song from Eye of Madness. This is a cool rock song. I love the staccato mixed in. It had a really, really, really cool bridge to it. Yeah. And as soon as I heard the bridge, I put it on my list because I'm like, this is a cool song. And I can see why it's in their top 10. So maybe I did kind of pick a greatest hit, but you know what? Our show, our rules, I don't care.
I'm with you. I'll back you up, man. I support you.
I'm also cheating on this one because No World for Tomorrow, I like their, it's a self, I'm picking two songs. One is called The Reapening, or the reaping, and it's like a minute and 43 yeah. seconds. The reaping, yes. and it's like a minute and 43 seconds long, and it leads right into the self the title track called No World for Tomorrow. So I'm counting them both. So again,
I think that's fair. They begin a lot of their albums with kind of like a, what's the opposite of a reprise? An introduction?
An overture.
An overture. Yes, they begin a lot of their albums with that overture, a really short song that kind of sets things up. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's really a great way to do it. A great way to kind of begin and set the stage for something like this.
Yeah. And this is a song that's very majestic and balanced, and it shows very mature arrangements, and it showed some restraint in songwriting. It showed some restraint in how they performed it vocally, and it's just really well done how they put this together. So again, I'm kind of cheating, but again, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'll allow it.
Okay. The next one is Hard Sell from Afterman Dissension. I really liked how the vocals mixed with the guitars on this one. There's a really, really cool guitar solo in there that's incredibly reminiscent of a Pink Floyd song. It's got a lot of the kind of the lots of attention to one note at a time, and it's kind of, you can hear the plucking of the notes and how they're being played. It's very detailed as far as the way that it goes. It's super Pink Floyd-y though, so mm-hmm. I loved that. And then the last one is You Got Spirit Kid, which again probably is one of the greater hits. I liked it because it's a fun arena rocker, and it's got a really, really supportive message to it, which is that nobody gives a who you are.
I like it, just the title.
You got spirit, kid. It's hard not to say that. You know,
it sounds like the
Walter Matthau voice.
I was gonna say the trainer from Rocky.
Right.
Hey, you got spirit, kid.
But nobody gives a who you are.
Right. Burgess Meredith. Yeah. No kidding. Totally. Love it. Very cool. Well, big thanks again to Peter
and Meg super backer.
He is our super backer. Super backer. Not just doing Coheed and Cambria, but you know, if you've listened to the show for a while, you know that he's made a lot of suggestions as a top level Patreon backer. So keep those coming, because I don't think there's anything that we haven't ultimately enjoyed something from, and that makes me happy that we get kind of that variety. That is what we're looking for here.
And speaking of something we're going to ultimately enjoy next week.
Oh my goodness. We're going to do this. Really? We're going to listen to Kanye West, which is, you know, he's one of those guys that fans are like, you know, he gets a bad rap. No pun intended.
Well played.
Yeah, it was totally unintended, but he does get kind of a bad rap because of his, what may come across as arrogance and indifference, and boy, talking about pomposity.
Immaturity,
right, exactly. And it's probably, I'm sure it's unjustified. I'm sure that we're going to listen to this stuff and be like, wow, I kind of see where this is going, where this is coming from. So
oddly enough, I know for a fact one of his albums, and I can't tell you which one it is because I don't know it off the top of my head, but one of his albums is listed in a list of top progressive albums of the last 20 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. I'm fascinated now.
Yeah.
Really fascinated. So we're going to be, yeah, there's so much stuff available in, I mean, you know, you look at albums and it's a lot of singles that we're going to have to wade through to get through to the albums, College Dropout, Late Registration, etc. So, But we'll get through it. We'll do it. We'll do it all together. And I think we'll have a blast with this. 9 albums to get through. Psh, piece of cake.
So says you.
So says me. That's coming up next week right here on Soundography. Between now and then, pull out your little keyboard for your computer and type us an email. Send it to soundographypodcast@gmail.com or go to Twitter. Follow us at The Soundography. We'll always let you know when there's a new episode out. We also talk about things that we have coming up, notable notes, things like that. So that's a great place to kind of keep an eye on us and what we're doing. If you want a better way of doing that, become a Patreon follower. Follow us, support us on Patreon. Even if it's $1 or $2 a month, that helps out so much and makes it so easy, so much easier for us to put in the time and effort that it does take to produce a quality show for you.
And I actually just put, I actually put a link up too to a folder filled with a bunch of bloopers and funny
really?
And silliness. So it's up there. If you're a Patreon supporter, you have access to our other folder that has the silliness in it.
I can't imagine the stuff that's in there. You'll find all that there at Patreon. Of course, you can go to soundography.com. Every episode we've ever done is right there. You'll find the playlists for the songs that we recommend. You will also find links to buy the album. I'll probably link to the essentials, the Coheed and Cambria essentials for this one. And of course, like I mentioned, you'll find a link to our Patreon to support us. Feel free to leave us a review. No matter how you do it, whether you tell it to us, well, in person or over Twitter or via email or even on stuff like iTunes and Spreaker and Stitcher and stuff like that, we'd love to hear what you have to say about our show and ideas and thoughts and recommendations you may have. And if you really want us to listen to those ideas and recommendations, by golly, you better become a patron because that's who we listen to first. Just saying. Anyway, that's it. That's going to do it for this week. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ebbett saying, that's it. We're done. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.